about Pollard's contribution to Stillwater, his multiple Man of the Year awards, the low crime rate the town boasted while he was in charge, a not-so-subtle dig at Jack's short tenure, his philanthropic contributions. By the end, Buck Pollard's reputation had been burnished to a blinding shine. Jack had watched the mourners leave and couldn't detect a hint of sorrow or grief on even one face. Most looked relieved. Reading Pollard's journals every night for 6 weeks, Jack knew why. "Never found a body." He turned to Dobson and Davy. "Would you excuse us?"
"They don't have to leave."
"Yes, they do."
"This is my house."
Jack sighed, knowing every conversation with Doyle was going to be a battle. "And my investigation." Norman Davy spoke up.
"I'm Joe's lawyer."
"It's fine, Joe. I'll be outside."
Dobson put his hand on Jack's shoulder and bowed his head.
"Lord, bless Chief McBride with the gift of discernment. Amen."
He patted Jack on the shoulder and left. When the door was closed behind Dobson, Doyle said,
"Well?"
Jack sat down, though Doyle hadn't invited him to. He crossed his legs and studied Doyle, trying to find the grieving father Miner alluded to the day before, and couldn't. Doyle seemed to have jumped to the anger stage of grief in record time. Jack imagined Ethan sitting in a chair, his brains blown out, and understood. Matt and Amy were killed by one gunshot wound to the head each, sometime between 1 a.m. and 4 a.m. Sunday morning. Matt was probably killed first with a silencer, since the position of Amy's body suggests she was asleep. Nothing of value was taken, and their home office wasn't disturbed in the least, which rules out robbery. "Do you know, did Matt and Amy always lock their doors?"
"I assume so. Amy was from Houston. She was afraid of her shadow."
"Why?"
"There was no sign of forced entry. A keypad opens the garage door. Any idea who knows the code?"
"I do. Mary, the kids, Michelle and Chris."
"Anyone else?"
"Barbara Dodsworth cleans their house once a week. She might."
Jack jotted the information down on his notepad. "Was the garage door up or down when you showed up yesterday?"
"Up. But Madison was there before me."
"She would have gone in through the garage, not the front door."
"The whole point of the keypad is so they don't have to keep up with a key."
Jack counted to 5 before he asked the next question. "Mr. Doyle, do you know of anyone who might want to harm Matt or Amy?" Doyle glared at him for a full 30 seconds before answering.
"Of course not."
"Matt had been working for you a little less than a year, correct?"
"Yes."
"How was the business?"
"More successful than I expected."
"Were you involved in the produce business?"
"Only generally during the weekly management meetings. Managers for all 4 divisions met with me and Michelle to discuss business issues."
"And was Matt having any issues with his business? With employees, suppliers, customers?"
"No."
"What about with Eric Sterry, Matt's former employer? Any animosity when he left?"
"No. He understood Matt and Amy's desire to move back home."
"What about issues with employees, suppliers, and customers there?"
"You'd have to ask Sterry."
"Amy subbed at the high school, correct?"
"Yes."
"Did she have any run-ins with students or parents?"
"Not that I'm aware of, but I didn't talk to Amy about her job."
"Why not?" Doyle looked at him like he was insane.
"Mary might have."
"I'll need to talk to her."
"Not today, you won't."
Jack didn't push it. Mary Doyle wasn't going anywhere. "When you saw Matt and Amy's bodies, what was your first thought?" Doyle twisted his head, looked at Jack from one eye.
"What do you mean?"
"I mean your instinctual reaction. A name, perhaps." Doyle sat back in his chair and clasped his hands together, resting them on his stomach. A tuft of gray chest hair peeked out from the top of his dress shirt. His hair was perfectly coiffed, but Jack noticed a patch of stubble on his chin he had missed when shaving.
My instinct was to find my granddaughter and get her out of there.
When Madison called you, what did she say?
Mary couldn't understand anything, she said. I heard her screaming and sobbing through the phone. I told Mary to tell her I'd be right there. The call lasted seconds, 10 at the most.
Doyle sighed.
I've told you all this.
Mr. Doyle, in investigations like this, you'll have to answer the same questions over and over. Jack wrote down the call details and asked, What happened when you arrived at the house?
I went inside.
Front door or back?
Back. Madison left the garage door up.
Doyle swallowed and struggled to continue. In a weak voice, he said,
I called out to Madison. Then I saw Matt.
He cleared his throat.
And Amy.
Doyle put his face in his hands.
I can't believe that little girl saw that.
Jack remained silent to give Doyle time to compose himself. Doyle scrubbed his face with his hands and sniffed. His eyes were red and watery, and his face was a mask of despair. I'm not sure what type of counseling services the county offers, Jack said, or if they have a victim's advocate on retainer or not. But I have the name of one in Dallas that might be able to help Madison, or at the very least help you and Mary find someone to help Madison.
Thank you,
he said, his voice husky. Jack cleared his throat. After you found Matt and Amy, what did you do?
I went to find Madison. When we came downstairs, Starling was in the living room, gun drawn.
What did Madison say to you while you waited for Starling to check the house?
Nothing. She was practically comatose.
When you were standing there, comforting your granddaughter, what was going through your mind?
Nothing.
No name jumped out at you. No one who might be responsible for killing your only son and daughter-in-law.
Matt and Amy didn't have any enemies.
What about your enemies, Mr. Doyle? In the following silence, the floor-to-ceiling grandfather clock ticked away 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. Doyle's eyes bored into him. The short truce they'd had over his grief, gone.
I can't think of anyone who hates me enough to kill my children.
Jack raised his eyebrow in disbelief, made sure Doyle saw it, and moved on. Are Amy's parents local?
No. She's from the Houston area. Her dad's dead. Her mom's here, though. She's staying at the Yorkville Best Western. The kids are with her.
Why? Doyle narrowed his eyes. Jack could tell he was about to lie to him.
B wanted them with her, and they wanted to be as far away from the crime scene as they could.
Are Michelle and Chris here? I need to speak to them as well.
Michelle's at the office. I have no idea where Chris is. Probably playing golf.
The day after his brother and sister-in-law are murdered.
We all deal with grief in different ways.
Michelle works, Chris plays golf, Mary takes to her bed, and your grandkids try to get as far away from you as possible. Why did Matt decide not to use Brian Grant as the contractor for his lake house?
It's news to me.
Was the house being built with Matt's personal money or company money? Doyle smirked. Jack knew he wouldn't admit to laundering money through a construction project, but wanted to ask anyway.
His personal money.
Then why would Michelle care who he used?
Michelle's controlling.
Was that a source of contention in the family?
No.
It seemed to be Saturday night.
You said they were drinking,
Not that much. Doyle sat forward. His leather chair creaked.
What are you driving at?
How involved are you in the business these days, Mr. Doyle?
I'm the president and CEO.
So all decisions run through you. What's Michelle's role?
She's the CFO.
So she would be the final word on what happens with company money. What was Matt and Michelle's relationship like?
Typical brother and sister.
Fights?
They were adults.
That's not an answer.
This is the direction of your investigation. Doyle Industries, family issues.
Most murders are perpetrated by family members, Mr. Doyle. What was Matt and Michelle's relationship like?
It's because of your ineptitude, we've had more crime in Stillwater in the last 2 months than in the last 20 years. It's because of you, Matt and Amy are dead.
As you know, the increase in crime is drug-related. Once Pollard stopped protecting the local organization, the cartel moved in. You mentioned Mexicans yesterday. Are you saying Matt or Amy were involved in drugs?
No, that's not what I'm saying.
It's what I'm hearing. I mean, my impression of Matt and Amy is they were about as straight arrow as you could get. Now, I could see them being caught in the crossfire. Innocents are used to get to the core of the organization. Looks like they overestimated Matt's importance in the family. No one seems to be mourning them. At least, not the immediate family. Doyle stood, placed his fists on his desk, and leaned forward.
You son of a bitch! After I win tomorrow...
Speaking of the election, I can't believe you're not dropping out.
So that liberal can bring in a bunch of hipsters to take over my town? Over my dead body!
I assumed after the death of your only son, your favorite child, according to many, you would want to focus on your family.
Get out!
You never have answered the question about Matt and Michelle's relationship.
We're done here,
Norman Davy said. Jack had forgotten he was in the room. Davy walked to the office door and opened it. Jack closed his notebook and stood. Joe, you can rest assured. I'll do everything possible to find their killer.
Why does that sound like a threat?
It's the same promise I make every family. I'll be in touch. Davy held out a business card.
If you need to speak to Mr. Doyle again, you go through me.
Jack took the card and stepped out of the office.
Mr. McBride,
Doyle called out. Jack turned. The sun was shining through the partially opened wood blinds, throwing alternating stripes of dark and light across Doyle's face. His eyes were cold, hard, and calculating.
You will answer to me. When I win tomorrow, my first order of business will be to destroy you.
Jack opened his car door and heard someone call his name. Norman Davy speed-walked toward him.
Chief!
Jack waited in the gap between his car and open door. Davy arrived out of breath. He put his hands on his hips and with a sheepish chuckle took a couple of deep breaths.
Don't get much exercise, he said.
Jack waited for Davy to say what he chased after him to say.
Whew, better now. About what Joe said when you left.
Vowing to destroy me? I thought it was a bit melodramatic. What did you think?
Mr. Doyle is understandably upset at the death of his only son. You shouldn't put much weight in what he says.
That's disappointing.
Do you want him to threaten you?
I'm thinking of the answers he gave. Are you saying I shouldn't believe him?
No.
Davy's expression hinted at panic.
Mr. Doyle was truthful in everything he said.
I'm more interested in what he didn't say. Davy shifted on his feet.
You mean about Matt and Michelle?
Yes.
You have a sibling. You know how volatile those relationships can be.
Matt and Michelle have a volatile relationship.
No.
Jack didn't smile, but he wanted to. Davey might be a good business lawyer, but Jack supposed he'd never been in court, much less questioned by the police. Did Matt ever come to you with a problem? Davey stiffened.
Why do you ask that?
You're the family lawyer. I assumed if Matt had a problem with someone or someone threatened him, maybe he would come to you.
Oh, right. There was the issue with his former boss when he left East Texas Produce.
Jack sighed. Why couldn't people tell a story without dramatic pauses? Fucking law and order. What was the issue?
Matt signed a non-compete when he went to work for Sterry, Eric Sterry, the owner, and Sterry sued him for violation when Matt left.
What happened?
Since Sterry's business includes organic and non-organic, we were able to get the non-compete voided because Matt's company was solely organic.
How was Matt's relationship with his father?
You can't possibly think, Joe.
Jack knew better than to answer the question either way. Everyone was a suspect, especially this early in the investigation. But if Davey and Doyle wouldn't tell Jack about Michelle and Matt's relationship, maybe insight into Matt and Joe's relationship would.
They were close. Joe adored Matt. He'd been trying to get Matt to come to work for him for years, but Matt always resisted. Until a year or so ago, when he came to him with the idea.
Why did he resist before?
Matt didn't want to have the business handed to him. He wanted to make his own way.
Jack struggled not to roll his eyes. Only silver spoon spoiled brats ever thought that way. Jack would have been thrilled to have his way in the world paved with a few more golden bricks than potholes.
Would the business have been handed to him? I would imagine Michelle would have something to say about it.
Davey laughed.
Oh, yeah.
Davey waved at a couple walking to the house holding a grocery bag and a tray of sandwiches.
Michelle promised to give him full autonomy, and he agreed.
So Matt didn't want to work with Michelle. Davey turned his attention back to Jack and narrowed his eyes.
I didn't say that.
What about Chris?
Chris?
Michelle's husband? Doyle's son-in-law?
I know who he is.
How does he fit in? He doesn't seem very engaged, does he?
Davey rolled his eyes.
Chris is a former athlete who can't get over the fact he wasn't good enough for the NFL.
What's his side business at the country club?
Davey furrowed his brow.
What do you mean?
Come on, Norman. You and I know a small-town country club is the closest these bumpkins get to a casino.
Shreveport is an hour and a half away.
You don't need to go to Shreveport to run numbers or place bets on games. He have a five-card stud game going on in the secret room off the locker room.
I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Trying to get a bead on the pecking order in this organization. How involved different family members and employees are in the... Jack paused as if choosing his words. Operation.
What does that have to do with Matt's murder?
Maybe nothing. Maybe everything. I'm going to take a close look at everything, personal and professional, to figure out who would want to murder in cold blood two of the nicest people I've met in Stillwater. Jack put one foot in his car. You can tell Joe Doyle to take that as a threat.
Chapter 26. Miner drove into Doyle Organics as Eddie left the warehouse after the morning rush. Eddie stuck his pencil between the band of his baseball cap and ear and walked to meet him.
Hey, Miner, you looking for Starling? He's back in the warehouse trying to interview the Mexicans.
Hi, Eddie.
The police cruiser's door clunked shut.
Chief probably should have sent Malik out here.
Probably.
Got a minute?
Sure.
Eddie jerked his head toward the office.
Come on, I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
No thanks, I'm gonna float away if I have any more coffee.
Eddie held the door open for Miner, walked around Matt's desk, and threw the clipboard on it. He paused.
Man, deja vu.
He looked up at Miner and forced the memory of Matt out of his mind.
I gotta get a damn chair. Matt never sat down.
Eddie motioned for Miner to sit and leaned against the credenza wedged behind the desk.
Understand you were with Matt Namey Saturday night.
With a lot of other people out at their lake lot.
Anything interesting happen?
Lots of interesting things happened. Care to be more specific?
Anyone threatened to kill Matt Namey? Maybe wave a 9mm around for good measure?
No, Eddie said with a laugh.
You took Ellie to the bonfire, right?
Eddie lifted an eyebrow.
So I'm not the first person you've talked to?
No.
He shrugged.
Yeah, Ellie went with me.
Leave with you?
Of course.
What time?
Midnight, 12:30, Eddie said.
After?
Eddie paused. Anyone at the bonfire could have told Miner he went with Ellie. If Miner questioned Ellie, did she cover for him like he asked?
We went to her place.
Which one?
Lake House.
What time did you leave?
Early morning. I dropped her at home so she could get ready for church.
Miner nodded.
Where'd you sleep?
Eddie laughed.
That's awfully personal.
Miner waited. Eddie narrowed his eyes. If Miner was testing his alibi against what Ellie said, she sure as hell wouldn't say Eddie slept in her bed.
I slept on the couch.
You didn't go home?
No. I ran into Dallas for the day, to see a friend. I thought Jack and Julie might want the house to themselves for a little longer. Ethan spent the night at Troy's.
Miner nodded.
When did you hear about Matt Namey?
Last night at the bookstore.
You didn't hear during the day? It's all the town could talk about.
I was in Dallas.
Miner nodded again.
Nobody texted you? Called you?
My phone was dead and I didn't bother to recharge it. Sometimes I like being out of touch, you know?
Not very convenient when there's a murder, though.
Eddie crossed his arms.
Surely you don't like me for their murders.
More than some, less than others. Tell me about the fight Saturday night.
I didn't see all of it. I'd gone into the woods to take care of some business.
With Michelle?
Eddie jerked his attention back to the officer.
Yeah.
Miner narrowed his eyes. Eddie could tell the more Miner talked to him, the less Miner liked him. Cops never liked him. If he only knew.
Did Chris see you walk out of the woods?
Eddie furrowed his brows.
I don't know. He had his hands full.
So he didn't see you and Michelle come out of the woods together?
Ah. You wonder if he's jealous.
Or if he knows Michelle's cheating on him.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm not the first.
Miner bobbed his head from side to side, not committing to a yes or no.
I don't know if he saw, or if he knows, or if he cares. Michelle and I don't talk about Chris. What could this possibly have to do with the murders?
Probably nothing.
Miner stood and went to the door.
Thanks for your time.
I'll walk you out.
When they were outside, Miner said,
By the way, I'm going to need the name and number of who you were with Sunday.
Why?
To check your alibi.
Eddie laughed.
For during the day?
Your brother expects me to be thorough.
Miner coughed and spit on the ground.
Sorry.
You driving Abe's truck these days?
Yeah, we traded.
Straight up?
Eddie nodded.
You got fleeced, son.
I don't think so.
Miner clicked his tongue on his teeth and pulled a notebook and pen from his front pocket. He clicked the pen and waited with it poised over a blank page. Eddie debated what name and number to give him. There were so many choices. Fuck it. Tony Hunt, 972-555-5208. Miner clicked the pen, closed the notebook, put them back in his pocket, and patted it. Thanks. Eddie watched Miner turn his car around in the gravel yard and pull out onto the road. When he was out of sight, Eddie turned on his heel and walked to the main office, head down. Eddie asked the receptionist, "She in?" The woman, eyes watery and red-nosed, nodded.
"Upstairs."
He took the stairs two at a time and walked into Joe Doyle's office without knocking. Michelle sat behind her father's desk, her feet propped up on the corner, her face remarkably composed and free of signs of grief.
"Father Dobson, I'll have to call you back,"
she said, hanging up the phone. Her eyes traveled from Eddie's head to his toes and back.
"What do you want?"
"I want to know what I'll get for lying to the police for you."
She dropped her feet to the floor, stood, and walked around the desk.
"I'd say an obstruction of justice charge and jail time. But since your brother is the chief, I'll say nothing."
She stopped inches from him. Her eyes moved to the baseball cap on his head. She pulled the pencil out and said,
"Take that fucking cap off. It reminds me of my husband."
Eddie took the hat off and tossed it on the desk, his eyes never leaving hers.
"Where have you been?"
she asked.
"Miss me?"
Michelle ran her hands through Eddie's hair to the nape of his neck. She rubbed his neck with her thumbs.
"I needed you yesterday."
"To run an errand? Maybe knock someone else off?"
She seemed genuinely hurt by the comment.
"No, I needed you to help me forget."
Eddie knew manipulating people was second nature to Michelle, as was using sex to get what she wanted and to control others. Still, there was a vulnerability to her Eddie hadn't seen before. Against his better judgment, Eddie leaned forward, cupped Michelle's face, and kissed her. They'd kissed before, passionately, hungrily, even angrily, but never like this. Her lips were soft and gentle beneath his. Her tongue moved languidly around his mouth. Her hands cradled the back of his head and massaged it gently. When Eddie pulled away, his confusion at the kiss was mirrored in her expression. They stared at each other for a long moment, each trying to regain their breath and composure. He pulled Michelle to him and kissed her hungrily, working on the buttons of her blouse as he did. When she reached for his belt, he pulled away. Her face was flushed, her lips swollen, her expression confused.
"Today it's all about you," he said.
She arched her eyebrows and smiled slowly, almost sweetly. Eddie pushed the papers, blotter, and pen holder off the desk and onto the floor, and lay Michelle back on Joe's desk.
"You are by far the best hire Matt ever made."
Michelle stood and smoothed her skirt down.
"So who interviewed you? Miner?"
"Yeah."
She cleared her throat and lifted her chin, regaining her professionalism.
"Good."
"It's not good. He's damn astute, Michelle. Don't underestimate him."
She laughed.
"I'm not. I'm going to buy him off. Pollard gave him hush money for years. I've let Miner swing in the breeze for a while to squash any flash of conscience he might have had when your brother came into town. Teresa's probably screaming in pain by now. He'll be easy enough to get in line. Where did you tell him you were Sunday morning?"
"With Ellie."
Michelle's eyebrows shot up.
"Is she backing you up?"
"For now."
"Well, I'll be goddamned. Little Miss Honesty is lying for her lover."
"We aren't lovers."
"Then why would she lie for you?"
Eddie stared at Michelle, and remained silent. He was tired of lying to everyone about everything.
That's what I thought. Where were you yesterday? I tried to call you all day.
Taking care of your problem like you wanted.
Where?
Somewhere there's not cell service.
Where's Kyle? He's not returning my calls.
Kyle went to visit a long-lost relative.
God damn him. I didn't tell him he could do that. Who did he go visit?
His father.
Jesse Grant's dead.
Michelle stilled.
You killed Kyle?
I was taking care of Muldoon when Grant shot at me. Lucky for me, he's a shit shot. I'm not. Did you tell him to kill me?
Her head jerked back.
Of course not. Why would you ask that?
Her voice went up an octave at the end of the question.
Why else send him with me?
So you could prove to Kyle once and for all you're on our side.
I didn't realize Kyle Grant was in charge.
Kyle Grant kept my hands clean. I guess you've promoted yourself to that job.
She narrowed her eyes.
Has Jack connected DI to the drug organization?
Eddie paused.
No.
She studied him before nodding.
But he will.
Yeah. Jack's a good cop. He'll catch you eventually.
Michelle smirked.
We'll see about that.
She patted him on the shoulder and tried to move past him.
I need to get back to work, and so do you.
Eddie stopped her.
We've got another problem.
Michelle inhaled.
What?
Brian Grant.
She laughed.
How is he our problem? I'd imagine he's your brother's number one suspect after Saturday night.
He may be. I don't know. But I do know he was here after and heard you threaten Matt.
I didn't threaten Matt.
Eddie laughed.
Yeah, you did.
Michelle gripped the edge of the desk until her knuckles were white.
What does he think he heard? No, better question. Why was he here?
He saw Matt pull in and wanted to apologize.
Michelle dropped her head to her hand, sighed, and rubbed her temple. Eddie continued.
He didn't see anything, but he heard enough to know about the operation, or at least have an idea about it. He's easy to shut up. Give him a job.
Michelle dropped her hand and stared up at Eddie.
Apparently they're hard up for money. Give him a job with your metal building business.
How do you know this?
What?
How do you know Brian was here?
I saw him last night at the book bank.
Brian at a bookstore? Try again.
He was picking up Paige.
Eddie mentally crossed his fingers he wouldn't be caught in these lies. The last thing he needed was for Michelle to read more into Eddie's protection of Susan than was there.
Want me to make the offer?
Michelle pushed him away and sat down behind the desk. She picked up the phone.
No, I'll do it.
Eddie pressed the disconnect button.
What?
She was pissed now.
Chris saw us come out of the woods.
So?
He doesn't care about us.
Seriously, Eddie? With all the other shit I have to do, like plan Matt and Amy's funeral, whether Chris cares I'm sucking your dick or not is down pretty far on the give-a-shit list, okay? Besides, Chris knows he's got a good deal.
She batted Eddie's hand off the phone. Michelle dialed and swiveled the chair around to stare at the back wall.
Brother Dobson, hi. It's Michelle. Sorry for the interruption. What time can I meet you at the funeral home?
Eddie left and almost ran into the wide-eyed receptionist standing outside the door.
We made a little bit of a mess in there.
He winked at her, and the woman dropped the papers she was holding. Chapter 27. The Grants lived on 10 acres of land east of town in a neat square red brick house with three dormer windows above a white-columned front porch. The flower beds were filled with colorful winter-hardy flowers, mostly pansies. To the right of the front door were two rocking chairs and a porch swing. Brightly colored pillows sat in the rocking chairs and were propped in the swing. A small round table sat between the rocking chairs with a potted ivy trailing down to the floor. A glass butterfly stuck out of the top of the ivy on a copper wire. Parked at an angle in front of the large metal building behind the house was a white dual cab Ford pickup with a square magnet advertising Grant & Son Construction on the doors and tailgate. The large bay doors of the building were open. Miner's gaze traveled from the clean and organized garage area to the tool-covered pegboard wall, to the jam box blaring hard rock and sitting on the work table, to the rifles and guns next to it. Brian stood with his back to Miner, cleaning what looked like a handgun. Miner released the protective strap over his holster and kept his hand on his own gun.
Brian?
Brian Grant jumped and turned, his fists moving up to protect his scratched face. He dropped his arms and with a slight limp, he walked over to the jam box, turned the music down, and said,
"Damn, Miner, don't sneak up on people like that."
"Sorry." "You limping?"
"Getting old."
"What are you doing there?" Miner jerked his chin toward the guns.
"Cleaning the arsenal."
"You won't be offended if I ask you to step away from the table." Brian reached toward the table for his cigarettes and lighter. Miner tensed.
"Keep still."
"Come on, Miner. I'm getting a smoke." "Over there," Miner said, motioning to a stool across the room. Brian shook his head but complied. Miner put himself between Brian and the guns, picked up the cigarettes and lighter, and handed them to Brian. He shook a cigarette out of a pack, placed it between his lips, and shoved the packet in his front pocket. He lit the Marlboro and took a drag.
"Horrible habit. This is the only place I can smoke."
He took another drag and flicked the ash on the ground.
"Let's not waste any time. You heard I got in a fight with Matt and think I might have killed him."
Miner didn't say anything.
"I told Susan you'd suspect me. She refused to believe it.
I want to hear what happened. From you."
"At the end of the party, Matt told me he was using another contractor."
Brian took another drag.
"I was mad. Of course I was mad. I'd had too much to drink, smoked a little wacky tobacco, and took a swing at him. If I hadn't been drinking, I would have never done it. Next morning, I felt awful."
Brian rose and limped to a bucket of sand. He lit a new cigarette from the old one and snuffed the old one out.
"I called Matt the next morning to apologize and ask for a job. If you can't beat him, join him, huh?" "The policeman answered. I hung up."
"Why?"
"Shock? I don't know, I just did."
"Sunday morning you got home and went to bed?" Brian dragged on his cigarette and studied Miner.
"You've seen Susan today, Miner?"
"Yep."
"Then you know the answer."
"I want to hear your version."
"She slammed it in the car door."
"Did you take her to the hospital?"
"No, Paige did."
"Why?"
"I'd been drinking. Susan was hurt. I knew which way the wind would blow."
"Where were you?"
"Here with the kids."
"Were you here when Susan got home?"
"I'd fallen asleep. When I woke up, she was next to me, dead to the world. I took the kids to church and came back and fixed that fucking car door. I've been meaning to do it for months. Now her pinky is probably going to be permanently deformed because of it."
Brian held his cigarette deep between his first two fingers, so his entire hand covered his mouth when he took a drag. Miner stepped toward Brian until he was only a foot away. Brian didn't flinch, but blew smoke out the side of his mouth and away from Miner.
"Did you shut Susan's hand in the door?"
"No."
"Did you take the car or truck to the bonfire?"
"Truck."
How did she shut her hand in the car?
I guess she needed something out of it. I don't know, Miner. I was putting the cooler in the shop when it happened.
Brian nodded his head to the corner of the room. Miner glanced over his shoulder and saw the cooler.
I heard her scream and came outside. She was holding her hand. Then Paige came outside.
And took Susan to the hospital.
Yeah.
And you went inside to sleep.
Yep.
These all your guns?
Yeah. Careful, they're all loaded, Brian said. Safety's on, of course.
Miner went to the table and looked at the guns.
Why are you cleaning your Beretta?
Troy and I went shooting yesterday afternoon.
Before or after you heard about Matt and Amy?
Brian sucked so hard on his cigarette, it accentuated the hollows of his cheeks. He blew the smoke out in one long, lazy breath.
After.
Lift up your shirt for me, Brian.
Brian's face changed from defiance to incredulity.
What?
Lift up your shirt.
Why?
I want to know why you're wincing every time you move.
Ate some bad catfish at Mabel's last night.
Mabel's catfish scrape your face, too.
Brian placed his cigarette between his lips and lifted his shirt. His torso was slim and well-defined, and completely free of bruises. Miner's eyes found Brian's. The defiance was back. He let his shirt fall.
Happy?
You seen Kyle lately?
Kyle? What's Kyle got to do with this?
Nothing, as far as we know. We've been looking for him in connection with something else for a few days now, and can't seem to locate him.
Who the hell knows? Or cares?
Put your Beretta back together. I have to take it.
Brian lodged the cigarette between his lips, picked up the slide and barrel.
You know, you're wasting your time here, Miner.
He inserted the barrel into the slide until it clicked, then attached the guide rod and spring.
You ought to be looking closer to home.
What do you mean?
Brian attached the assembled slide to the main part of the gun, pulled it back, and held the gun out to Miner by the trigger protector.
I didn't kill Matt and Amy. The sooner you figure out who did, the better my life will be.
Chapter 28.
Ellie balanced the cookie on top of the coffee cup in her left hand and opened the heavy front door to the city hall with her right. Susan sat at the front counter, her phone headset nestled across the top of her blonde hair like the headbands she had worn in high school. She was talking low, and Ellie hung back to give her privacy. Susan glanced up, and Ellie lifted the cookie and coffee. A finger raise, a murmured goodbye, and Susan clicked off. Ellie hoped for a smile when her friend looked up again, but was disappointed.
Thought you might want a snack, Ellie said. Earlene brought these cookies. Cherry chocolate chunk. They're divine. Thanks.
She reached down.
How much do I owe you? Susan?
Ellie heard her drop her purse onto the floor. Susan winced.
You don't have to check up on me. I'm not. Liar. Fine. How's your hand? It hurts. Are you taking something? Advil? Didn't Poole give you anything stronger? Yes, but I can't sound like a drunkard when I answer the city hall phone, now can I? You shouldn't have come in. You know I have no choice. If you need money, you know. No. Don't you have sick days? I'm sure Jack would. Jack? Chief McBride.
Susan stared at Ellie. She could read Ellie as well as Ellie could read her. They'd had lots of practice.
Has he interviewed you? Miner came by. Was Kelly there?
Susan, usually so guarded, wore her suspicion like a bridal veil.
Yes. getting coffee. Kelly doesn't drink coffee. I can see y'all now, sitting around talking about poor Susan. I wonder if Brian slammed her hand in the car door again.
Ellie chose to remain silent rather than lie.
What did you tell Miner? I told him Brian and Matt got into it. There were too many people at the lake. I couldn't lie. Why would you? Well,
Ellie stopped herself. Ellie hated lying, was famous for her honesty. It's what came from being lied to and manipulated for years by people she loved. With her good hand, Susan fiddled with the items on her desk, straightening the blotter, adjusting the location of her message pad, clicking closed her pen and placing it diagonally across the pad.
They took Brian's gun. Susan, save it.
She continued rearranging things on her desk, now with more force than necessary. She slammed her stapler down on the desk with her good hand.
You don't have any idea what it's like. People thinking bad of him because of his family. His dad. Kyle.
She glared at her best friend.
Of friends thinking he abuses his family. Susan, I mean you of all people. What's that supposed to mean? Why is it no one wonders if you're a gambler, a slut, or a drunk? God knows that's what the town thinks of your parents. You've got some crooked politicians in your family tree, too, but everyone thinks the world of you. Ellie York Martin can do no wrong. You sure as hell aren't haunted by the sins of your parents. I don't know, Susan. Maybe it's because I don't sleep around, gamble, or drink too much. You sure part of that statement isn't a lie?
Ellie straightened, the jab hitting the intended mark. Ellie had forgotten how cruel Susan could be when she wanted. She thought of watching Brian bully Susan into taking a hit of the joint on Saturday night, of seeing the same type of interaction between them for 25 years, of Susan's phantom car accident in high school, of Ellie's conversation with Paige, the misery on the girl's face, the confusion. She decided she was tired of looking the other way.
How did you slam your hand in the car if you were in the truck?
Susan narrowed her eyes.
It's your car with the loose door, right? But you were in the truck. You need to mind your own business. I'm done with standing by while what? Brian beats me? He doesn't beat me. How many times do I have to tell you? You and Kelly are wrong about Brian. You've always been wrong. I mean, really. Do you think I would have married him? I would have stayed with him? I mean, what's worse, you thinking so little of Brian or so little of me? Maybe because you're lying to me. You're the last person who needs to lecture me about lying.
Ellie held her hands up in surrender.
Fine. We won't worry about you anymore. Me?
Her laugh was bitter, condescending.
Have you looked at your life lately? You're sleeping with two brothers, one of them married. Enjoy your coffee. Take it. I don't want it.
Ellie reached for the coffee and cookie, trying to stay as far away from Susan as possible. She left, her stomach churning with nausea, and ran straight into the broad chest of Lincoln Bishop.
Oh, sorry, Ellie. I didn't spill on you, did I?
He held Ellie's elbows gently.
No, thank you.
She held out the coffee and cookie.
This is for you. Welcome to Stillwater.
Lincoln took the cup and paper bag with a perplexed expression on his face.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
Ellie made it out the door, down the steps, and halfway across the square, before she threw up. Chapter 29. If Jack had been looking out the window of Bob Underwood's law office, he would have seen Ellie throwing up in the park. Instead, he was staring at the family pictures on the credenza, without seeing them, thinking of the similar display in Ann Newberry's office. Jack's office had one framed picture, of Ethan when he was in elementary school, in a frame Ethan made for Father's Day when he was 5. Each year, Jules gave him a new picture to replace the old. Jack always kept the old ones in the frame behind, like his mother did, so frames ended up being a small time capsule, their own photo album. He couldn't remember when Jules stopped giving him a new picture. He didn't even know how old Ethan was in the picture he had. Bob Underwood walked into his office, his thin hair flying away, his large square glasses slid halfway down his sweaty nose.
"Sorry I'm late, Jack."
Bob flopped his briefcase down on the credenza and took a deep breath.
"I was over in Yorkville. Court, motion to dismiss. Denied. Go to trial next week."
"What's the case?"
"Bounce checks."
He removed his jacket and hung it on a coat rack in the corner.
"I'm surprised you made this appointment, what with the murders and all."
Bob sat down, pulled a yellow legal pad toward him, took a pen from an old-fashioned pen stand on his desk, and wrote, "Jack McBride, Monday, 11-5, on the top of the page. He looked up and waited.
"I want a divorce."
Bob put his pen down and sat back.
"I charge $3,000 for a standard divorce. Costs go up if it's contested and we go to court."
"Do you need a retainer?"
"Whatever's in your pocket is fine."
Jack fished a 20 out and put it on the desk. Bob picked his pen back up and waited. Even being succinct, Jack spent 30 minutes telling Bob the story of his marriage's dissolution. Bob took notes, asked a clarifying question or two, but mainly let Jack talk. It felt good to get it all out to someone who had no preconceived opinion of Jack and Julie's relationship, no personality conflicts, no special interest. Bob hadn't even met Julie.
"Do you have the note Julie left?"
"No, I tore it up."
"Did anyone else see it?"
"No."
"So she can use any reason she wants why she left, and you can't contradict her?"
"Yes."
Jack could recite the note verbatim, but he doubted it would help, so he didn't mention it. Bob tapped his pen on the legal pad, leaving little black dots on the margin.
"We had an appointment 6 weeks ago. Why did you cancel?"
"Ellie convinced me it was the best thing to do.
Ethan was so happy to have his mother back, I thought I should at least give it a shot."
"Probably a mistake."
"What?"
"Well, though you couldn't have gotten an uncontested divorce because of her returning before the 365, you would have still had solid grounds for divorce. Would have been difficult for her to contest it. Now she's back, trying, and you're initiating proceedings."
"It doesn't change the fact she left and was gone for a year."
I know, but this 6 week reprieve will have to be explained better."
Bob made a note and asked,
"That it?"
"Yes."
"Is there another woman?"
"Jules likes men."
"I wasn't talking about her, and you know it."
"There were other women. In Dallas. I told you I went through a rough patch."
"How rough are we talking about here? A couple of one-night stands, bondage, S&M? You ever take your anger out on some hooker?"
"No."
"On anyone?"
"Not on a woman."
"How many other women are we talking about?"
"I didn't keep count."
"Anyone going to show up with a little Jack Jr. in the oven?"
"No."
Bob remained silent. Jack knew the trick well, but it still worked on him. "There were probably 10 or 12 women. I would pick them up at lunch."
"Same bar every time?"
"No, different. They were waitresses, bartenders."
"Julie friends with any of your former co-workers?"
"No."
"Any chance she'll find out about your peccadillos?"
"I wouldn't think so.
Anyway, she was cheating on me, remember?"
I saw her with my own eyes. Anything she might find would be hearsay. Bob sat forward.
Well, let's hope she doesn't find out. Does she have any idea you're thinking of divorce?
I think she suspects. She's trying very hard.
Are you?
Not as hard as she is. Bob put his pen down.
Why do you want this divorce?
I don't love her.
Try again.
Isn't that enough?
If you go into this with the reason as, I don't love her, you won't get custody of Ethan. It will look like you're giving up on your marriage.
She left. On his fucking birthday. Went off to God knows where with a man, never contacted me or Ethan. No one. I bought Christmas presents for Ethan from her, lied to him for a fucking year so he wouldn't think his mother left him. Took care of him when he got the flu. I was questioned, suspected of murdering my wife, which pretty much ruined my career. Hell, she might not even be there when I get home. What judge in their right mind would give custody to her?
She left on Ethan's birthday.
Yeah, classy, right? Bob cleared his throat.
It sure makes her look bad. I'd hate to get your hopes up, but I'd be shocked if you don't win this running away. You'll still probably have to share custody.
No, I want full custody.
Why? Joint custody would be best for Ethan.
Jack thought of Ellie's threat. I can't live in a town with the two of you. Because I'm not leaving Stillwater, and I don't want to give her a reason to stay. Living in a town this size, divorced from her, would be miserable. At least in the city, there would be a million other people around as a buffer.
Then move back to Dallas.
I don't want to.
You like us that much?
You're growing on me.
What if you get fired?
I don't plan on letting that happen. Bob smiled.
It might not happen today, this week, or even this month, but it'll happen.
Thanks for your confidence, Bob.
Don't be sensitive, Jack. You'll get fired with that attitude for sure. Hypothetically, let's say you get fired. You sticking around then?
I don't know what this has to do with my divorce or custody of Ethan. If I lose my job, Ethan will go wherever I go.
But you'd prefer to stay here.
Jack didn't respond. Bob continued.
Because of Ellie?
What? Bob laughed.
You youngsters. I might be an old man, but I got good eyes. Always have. Even if I was blind as a bat, I would have felt the electricity sparking off you two like a damn transfer station at her business launch back, what was it, 6 weeks ago?
Jack shifted in his chair.
It's that obvious?
Well, you don't have much of a poker face when you're around her, that's for damn sure.
Jesus. Jack rubbed his forehead.
How far has it gone with Ellie?
Jack nodded, and Bob continued.
Have you been around each other with Julie?
Once or twice.
Think she cottoned on?
Jack thought about Saturday night after the lake. Since he'd distracted Julie from questioning him too closely about Ellie, she hadn't mentioned her again. But that didn't mean anything. She'd kept her plans to leave Jack secret for weeks, months. He wouldn't know what Julie suspected until she wanted him to know, which would be the worst possible time.
I honestly don't know.
Does anyone else know?
Eddie.
Kelly? Susan?
I don't know. I don't think so. They wouldn't say anything.
You wouldn't think, but I wouldn't count on it. Small-town gossips can make lies into the truth. They can take a suspicion with a kernel of truth and make it into scandal. They take a scandal and ruin lives.
We stopped seeing each other when Julie got back in town.
Good. Keep it up.
Jack nodded, though it was the last thing he wanted. Since Saturday night, he'd been trying to figure out how to meet Ellie alone. He needed to tell her he loved her, and hear her say she loved him, again. "Sure," Jack said.
"I'm serious. You cannot see her at all."
"That's going to be hard in a small town like this."
"I know, but not impossible. You have to avoid her like the plague."
"Avoid her?
Don't go get coffee. Don't make a point to talk to her when you do see her in groups. Whatever you do, don't be alone with her."
"I think that's a little drastic."
"Do you want custody of your son?"
"Yes."
"Do you think your wife is capable of doing anything possible, even something despicable, to keep you from divorcing her? From getting full custody of Ethan?"
"Yes."
"Then you have to cut Ellie out of your life completely."
"Until Julie's served the papers, right?"
"No. Until she signs them."
Chapter 30. Jack sat in his car outside Michelle Ryan's house and absently watched the comings and goings of mourners.
"You have to cut Ellie out of your life completely."
Ellie and Kelly walked out of the front door in deep conversation. Kelly gestured with her hands as she talked. Ellie listened, nodded, and interjected a few words here and there as they walked to Kelly's red Escalade. Jack waited to get out of his car until they were driving past his. He gave a brief wave in greeting as they drove by. Though he only glanced in her direction, Ellie's puzzled expression lodged in his heart and festered there.
"Do you think your wife is capable of doing anything possible, even something despicable, to keep you from getting full custody of Ethan?"
If Julie even suspected Jack wanted a divorce or was in love with Ellie, she would do whatever she could to destroy him. His career, his relationship with Ethan, his relationship with Ellie, his reputation in town, though that was admittedly tenuous at the moment anyway.
"Until she signs the papers."
Jack could easily imagine Julie dragging out the divorce just to screw him. She had a bottomless pit of money thanks to her parents. Jack didn't. He had already depleted his savings with his 3-month unemployment, road trip, and down payment on the house in Stillwater. He needed to have enough proof of her cheating and abandonment when the papers were served to entice her to sign. He had all of the unanswered emails and their red receipts. He could talk to the cops in Emerson who investigated him regarding her disappearance last year. They would be more than willing, considering they were dragged around by one of their own, who was Julie's spurned lover. His former partner would vouch for his version of events as well, though Jack's professional relationship with Alex might make her seem too sympathetic of a witness. If only Julie would leave again. Jack paused at the front door and rubbed his chest. He hated himself for being thankful for a case to keep his mind off of his personal problems. It was a ready and believable excuse to give to Julie for not being around, for avoiding an encore of Saturday night. Her flirty comments and meaningful glances made it clear she expected more of the same. Was she playing a part, faking her enthusiasm to keep him interested? Maybe to a point, but he knew her physical cues and reactions well enough to know much of what happened was real. Hell, physically, he couldn't help but respond. She was right. They always were great together in bed. But mentally and emotionally, he was racked with guilt. He shook his head to clear it and knocked on the door. Michelle answered.
"Jack."
She stepped aside to let him enter.
"Michelle, I'm so sorry for your loss."
"Thank you."
Her voice was toneless. The activity at her house was more subdued than at her parents'. Based on the age of the mourners, This generation hadn't seen enough death to be as good at grief as Joe's generation. Everyone looked uncomfortable, as if unsure what to do or to say. A group of men stood huddled around the big screen television, talking urgently and low. Jack imagined the conversation revolved around the appropriateness of turning on Monday Night Football pregame in the middle of a death visitation. One man checked his watch and looked at the TV. Another had his head in his phone, texting Chris about his bet, possibly. Is there somewhere we can talk? Michelle opened a door to the right of the entrance. Jack stopped in the doorway of a guest bedroom, tastefully but generically decorated. Sports magazines were stacked on the bedside table, next to a half-empty water glass, an empty beer bottle, and a large bottle of Advil. Michelle sat on the bed. Her eyes dared him to enter. I'm not interviewing you in a bedroom. Especially your husband's, he thought. Her mouth curled into a smile, equal parts calculating and manipulative, and more than a little erotic.
Don't you trust me?
Jack leaned against the door jamb. You aren't acting like a grieving sister. Why is that? Michelle stood and stalked over to him. She wore a tight skirt and silk blouse. Her legs were bare and ended in 4-inch heels. She was almost eye to eye with him.
Off the record.
She leaned forward and whispered.
I didn't like my brother or his wife much.
She lingered close to him, her gaze roaming across his face. Her lips turned into a playful smile. Michelle wore the same perfume as Julie, Eternity, and too much of it. So you're glad they're dead?
Of course not.
A couple paused at the front door. The man looked embarrassed, perhaps perplexed, to see Jack and Michelle standing so close together. The woman didn't seem surprised at all. Michelle arranged her face in a wan, grieving smile and moved away from Jack toward the couple.
Thanks so much for coming.
She hugged the woman and kissed the man on the cheek, lingering a half second too long.
We're so sorry, the man said.
Michelle opened the door and herded them out.
We all are, Kirk.
The woman moved in front of the man.
Don't worry about the meals ministry. We've got tomorrow covered. Don't be ridiculous, Don,
Michelle said.
Life goes on. Matt and Amy believed in the meals ministry as much as I do. I'll be there as I am every Tuesday. If you're sure,
Don said. The couple walked through the door.
I'll see you then,
Michelle said and closed the door with a snap. The knocker on the outside thumped against the door. When she turned back to Jack, her expression was once again blank.
Let's sit by the pool.
They sat at a round metal table with red Solo cups of iced tea in front of them. The automatic pool sweeper gurgled and sprayed water before submerging again. Jack sipped his tea and watched Michelle.
Are you going to ask me questions or stare at me?
Michelle said. Does it make you uncomfortable?
No. I have things to do. A business to run, an election to win, a funeral to plan.
I guess you're in charge while your dad deals with this and the election.
She chuckled.
Right.
Does it drive you crazy people give him credit for the company's success?
Michelle stared at Jack in silence.
What's the meals ministry?
What it sounds like. Delivering meals to shut-ins, old people, whoever needs them.
Is that through your church?
All the Stillwater churches participate. Is this what you came to talk to me about? My Christian witness?
Michelle smirked around the last two words and drank her tea.
It's something I didn't know about you, but it's not surprising. Crooks and liars have always been an altruistic lot.
What makes you think I'm a crook?
You come from a long line of them, I hear.
Michelle laughed. Are you seriously sitting there calling my father a crook? The man who'll hold your career in his hand in less than 24 hours. I gotta say, McBride, you've got some balls.
You don't deny the liar part.
She shrugged. If it gets me what I want.
Why would anyone want to kill Matt and Amy?
I have no idea. Isn't it your job to find out?
I find out by questioning people who knew them.
Matt and I were not close. I have no idea who would want to kill him. I doubt Amy inspired enough passion in anyone to want to kill her.